You're listening to Salon Soul, brothers and sisters. Hump of the Week, 7 at 7, archive interview with today's guests, Paul and Richard Drumgool of Zeba Hairdressing.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and fellow Salon Soul brothers and sisters. Tonight, we've got a big treat for you. It's two guys that I know, well, God, I know as long as I'm in hairdressing. One was a great mentor of mine because he's a lot older than me. Well, he's not. It's just that I was a latecomer to the trade, and he was a big inspiration on really getting me into the art of cutting hair and colour back in the day when we started. The other chap then kind of came along a little while later, and I hope I might have influenced his career at some stage in some way, because it was probably a little bit reverse. And tonight I've got the amazing brothers that are Paul and Richard of Zeba Hairdressing. Four amazing salons, two in Dublin, one on Northside, one on Southside, one in a department store, one flagship shop on South William Street, which I'm sitting in at the moment, but not in the shop, I'm out on the street. Pretty cold at the moment, actually, you know. And we are social distance from those people in the back. So as you'll know, somebody forgot to take that.
That's some of the team on their lunch.
Well, I'm still waiting for my coffee. I wish the waitress ever hurry up. So St. William Street is the flagship shop. Then they also have a beautiful salon in a shopping centre out in Maynooth. And then they've got a high street shop in Sandymount. A team of over 70 hair professionals. Just 28 years in business, correct me if I'm wrong, 28 years in business. Both started when they were 9.
Thanks, Greg.
And both married to hair professionals. Like, it's a family steeped in hairdressing history. Mom was a hairdresser, wives hairdressers, cousin hairdresser, who I ended up marrying. So it's just a legacy of hairdressing, and the next generation is even there, which I'm sure you can tell me. So I'm going to start with the 7 questions, and I'm going to hit you, Paul, with the first one, being the senior here. And the first is, why did you choose a career in hairdressing, Paul?
As you said, Greg, you know, family ties there. As you mentioned, our mom was a hairdresser, and always will be. She's still with us, thanks be to God.
Hold on.
Very good. There's your coffee. Good man.
Your coffee.
That's a new service on St. William Street.
Put it on the bill for Zeba. Zeba pay for you. Okay.
But my mom done hairdressing while I was in school, and I would have always been around that. So, you know, that was always there. But it wasn't my sort of first love at the time. It was more influence than anything else. I did want to go on to be an architect. Stayed on in school, done the leaving cert, was going to go to college, went into work where my father worked, which was the independent newspapers at the time. Didn't particularly like that. And my cousin, Mary, was working in a very trendy salon at the time in Toppies in the Irish Life Mall. It was one of the first shopping centres in the city. And it was a very high-profile salon. Steiner were a world brand. They had on the cruise ships, their salons, which I think they still have. And it was something that I thought, well, always wanted to travel, know a bit of hairdressing, went to work with my cousin in Steiner, and that was the start of me.
When you say, well, actually, one of the unique things about Toppies was they were the first salon I seen with a hairdryer hung from the ceiling.
That's right.
It was ahead of its time. It was state of the art. I remember it well from just on the way, walking up and down the road, looking in the window, because I was too young to start hairdressing.
When you were 5, yeah.
So, Richard, what made you decide to join the hairdressing?
It was a little bit like, as Paul explained, our mom's a hairdresser, and, you know, been at home and always having that influence around with my mom, and then Paul obviously starting. And I had to do something besides kick a ball in the street, so my mom got Paul to dragged me into the salon one Saturday, and it started in Mary Street. Paul was just moving on up to Graft Street at the time, and yourself was there, and Alison, and Peter MacDonald. And I really liked that. I was still in school at the time, and done 2 years, and then left school just after the junior cert, or inter cert, whatever it was then. And it started my career there.
It was under yourself, Mary Street salon, because I think at its time, it probably had the highest quota of male hairdressers in Ireland. Like, we really had some serious amount of male hairdressers. And when you think about out of there, that went on to, you know, relatively good success. You know what I mean? So there must have been something in the water down in Mary Street that pushed us on. And like for you, Paul, it must have been a dream come true to even eventually come full circle. And I'm sure we'll get to it when by opening up in Arnott's that you ended up back on the same street again, you know?
Yeah.
We'll save that one for later on. So the career as a hairdresser, you trained, you've done it. I remember, Paul, at the time when I came in, yourself and Mark McCauley like were like a breath of fresh air. You know what I mean? And I was very lucky. It was like a challenge to see which of you could teach me the most. And then you both went off. Paul, you went up to Grafton Street, Mark on into the training centre. And the career path you had then, Paul, how it evolved. And you know what I mean? Like, you really went to the top of the tree of the management within Peter Mark at a very quick pace. So when did you feel it was like leading this question too? What made you want to become a salon owner?
Yeah, I suppose from the time of going into hairdressing right at the beginning, Greg, that would have been always in my mind, was to have my own business, have my own salon. Then, you know, you get into the daily routine of going to work. And I mean, Peter Mark was an amazing experience. I had 11 great years at Peter Mark. And as you said, came through the ranks very quickly. And they gave me amazing opportunities to do that. I got a very good training early on and had great teachers around me and mentors around me, which really excelled my career. The salon you work in is very important, and the people that train you within that salon are even more important. So a shout out to all them trainers that's who makes the hairdressers today, not just the salons, it's the individual trainers that give their time to education, to staying back after work perhaps to train young people. So moving on very quickly, I went into management and grew up through management and eventually ended up in Stephen's Green managing their high profile Valentino at the time. Worked there for a number of years, and then sort of, it wasn't that there wasn't anywhere else to go. I knew there was, but I just felt it was time for me to do what I wanted to do right from the start. And I think that's very important. You know, have your goals and never hold on to them. Always keep them there, because sometimes we can lose track of them. You know, we have a destination. You know, you might change your journey to get to that destination, but, you know, your goal should be to reach that destination and then carry on from there.
And then I'm going to flip back to you, Richard, here. And it's slightly different with this question, because you actually left at a very young age with less experience to open up Final Touch.
Final Touch.
How does Greg remember that? Because Greg was your manager in Peter Mark at the time that you had to hand your notice into.
That's right. I got the opportunity.
A really good stylist. I wasn't happy, but you know what? It was the right move for you. So what made you think about, how did that evolve? Elaborate a little bit on that.
Well, how Ashbourne evolved, I think it's a little bit like our minute salon. It's not a place I'd ever been before until someone said there's an opportunity of a shopping centre, opening up a new shopping centre. And my sister, her husband was playing rugby out that area, and they were looking at a house. And it was, she said it to me, Saf and Paul. And at the time I was just turned 21. And I was an assistant manager with a great manager in Northside Shopping Centre at the time. And yourself, Greg, of course. And then it was just an opportunity that came along. And I suppose, like, I was under good guidance from yourself and obviously Paul as well. And it was something that we discussed, and it was an opportunity for us to step outside, you know, and, you know, to start to run a business. You know, like, managing the salon is one thing, and managing it for somebody else and always having that background. But it was great to actually just take the leap and do it. Yeah, and it was actually quite good. Yeah, it was very good. It was a small salon, but it was good.
And how many years did you have Final Touch for, Richard?
We had it for 6 years.
6 years?
Yeah, it was 6 years. Yeah, it was 6 years. And then...
a lot of experience there and a lot of...
Yeah.
I suppose from you on the outside watching in, Paul, it was a lot of things to... You know, we won't do that when we make it.
What we've done, Greg, I'd say Richard had Final Touch for 6 years. We opened Ziva, myself and Angie, about a year after Final Touch was opened. So they ran side by side for a 5-year period. And, you know, it was a good learning curve for Richard and myself. He was working in his salon, I was working in my salon. And then, you know, we decided, I think, you know, town is for me and we wanted to grow. And so we merged and Richard came into Ziba at the time, it was in Stephen Street. And that was the sort of the new beginning of Ziba at that point in time.
And looking at both your partners as well, because you've been a big part of your business, Richard, you've never worked at Wendy. But no. These are childhood sweethearts.
Yeah, very much so.
Around the corner from each other. And do you think, like, the fact that, you know, would that influence Wendy to go into hairdressing, do you think? Or do you know what I mean?
Yeah, at the time when Wendy had started, she was working in Shylock's. Was it Shylock's? Yeah.
Yeah.
Just in work experience, and then started to work with a good friend of ours, Des, in Petermark in the Oilac. And she's still working with Des and very successfully. And I think that's obviously been a key to our relationship as well. She has her, you know, her niche there, what she does. She's a very busy stylist. And yeah, it works for us.
And then, Paul, was it you that unearthed this amazing talent that came down from Donegal and saying, this girl's going to go on and win some serious trophies. If I'm going to keep her, I better marry her.
Yeah, I'll take all the credit for that, Greg. Thanks very much.
Yeah,
I mean, I met Angie when she started her career. I was actually her manager, which I think is illegal now. But at the time, you know, Angie started to work in Dunleary. I was managing Dunleary at the time. And I moved then to Grafton Street. And she asked for a transfer. And I knew she had great potential at the time as a hairdresser. And when she moved in, it was later on the relationship started to grow then, later on in the years. Very lucky for me. That did happen.
Moving on, because salon ownership, like, it was, I think it was a destiny, it was in both your DNA to end up having your own business. But the next question I want to ask you is, before you go back to thinking what you would have done, because the next question is, what would you have done differently? I think I have to point out that, like, you've won everything. You've won the L'Oreal Colour Trophy. Angie has been Hairdresser of the Year. She, you know what I mean, as well, hasn't she?
Yeah. I was not Angie was Irish Hairdresser of the Year.
The one thing that really stood out to me from both of you going back and would have been a big inspiration to me when I was leaving was the way it's looked at the industry as a business and not just about doing hair. And I think it was now that you went on to win the first Irish salon to win the Global Business Award. And then you went on to win it 3 times. So it was always the I loved when I'd meet you. It was the fact that you weren't talking about the best haircut. It was about the service, the turnover. You know what I mean? It was looking at it as a business. And it really, I knew when I left to open my business that I was leading from what yous had done. And a lot of that were like going to 365, which I don't know whether anybody in Ireland is still around 365. And it was a great learning curve for us all. But that type of business education wasn't available in Ireland at the time for hairdressers, which it is now. You know what I mean? Like, so when I say go back and do anything differently, is there anything you would do differently if you went back?
Yeah. As you said, you mentioned 365 there, and we were very lucky and fortunate. We came across 365 very early on in our business, Greg. Yeah, I mean, I probably always did have a little bit of a business mind, and you're quite right. I always focused on growing other people. Training was a huge thing and is the biggest thing of still what we do today. And that was always my goal, not for me personally to be, you know, the biggest and the best hairdresser out there, but for the business to be, the salon to be. It's the reason I didn't call it my name, although some people would do that, which, you know, everybody has their own way. But I wanted the brands to grow, not just me, and to grow other people within that and to give them careers and career paths and futures in the business. And that's how we've been able to grow our business. So in that respect, no, I wouldn't have done anything different. But on education-wise, as regards to 365, what they taught us was the different attributes of running the business, from accounts to banks to dealing with, you know, all sorts of what we find out later on. And sometimes it's too late what we find out. But yeah, if I could have done more of that before I even went in, that's the only thing that I'd say I would actually do better, I wouldn't say different, and do more of.
And Richard, from you, from the point of view of, say, Final Touch, when you left, did you feel it was the God, I should have probably hung on a little bit more experience. Or was it great that you could lean on Paul to get that experience?
No. We've been in 365 while we were in final touch as well. And I think that's what made a decision that obviously going into work in the city and growing from there would be the better option. Final touch was very good and it was very successful. And it was something that we, you know, sold on. It wasn't that we closed the shop, you know, and it was a business transaction. So it was very good. Yeah. And at that stage, I was still quite young doing that. And but 365, we had gone through the core program, which you would have gone through at that stage. And it made us realize that, you know, there is a difference between running a salon and running a business. You know, and as Paul said, it would have been great that if we had that information before we started, it would have helped and made maybe we would have looked on things a little bit different. But it's great to see now that's readily available in Ireland. And obviously, you don't have to be getting on a plane anymore. You can just turn on your Zoom and do things like that now.
What's a plane?
Yeah.
If only.
Yeah, I see the odd one.
They used to fly past my window all the time from where I live. And now it's a rarity. You're out walking, you go, oh, look, there's a plane. You know, but we'll get back.
It's called Zoom now.
It's on its way back. So, listen, the fact that you have a city, a flagship, you know, four-story salon in the city centre, you've got a shopping centre salon out in a country town. You've got the old high street of a very well-established, nice upper-class area in Sandy Mount, and you've got a major department store. What makes a fantastic salon?
Well, I think a fantastic salon, it's always about the energy, you know, from when you walk in, whether it's from the atmosphere, the energy and atmosphere and ambience. And that's created by the people who are in it. Obviously, we can give them the tools and as in the nice salon and, you know, promote it well and put the core team in. But it's them who create that energy. And, you know, it's a culture. And I know people talk about cultures a lot more these days. And we do have a culture within the company. But each salon has its own energy and culture as well. And I think that's what makes it. If you go into any of our salons, they're different. But that's at the forefront from when the client walks in the door. You know, that's what I think makes us an amazing salon. It's the people working together, you know, how they complement each other, how they acknowledge each other's work. You know, it's ongoing in the salons and it's great to see. So I think that's my look on that anyway.
Yeah. Paul, have you anything to add there?
Yeah, I don't think there's any one thing, Greg. I think it's a multiple of things. And it was something actually David Murray said in one of your interviews about clarity. And I think he summed it up very well. Is to have clarity and sort of focus on what you want as a business and to, you know, that your team understand that and that they buy into it and it's what they want. It's not just what you want. So that you're all, you know, you come into work every day for the same reason. And I think that was a word that I was going to say a lot of things. And when I seen him saying that word, I thought, you know, that's really summing it up. I mean, you have to be very clear and clear with your team and, you know, and then with you as well. Sometimes it's not you telling them, they have to tell you. You've got to be able to listen, and you've got to be able to listen to, you know, maybe things that you don't like about what's happening to go down that road and have the same goals. Training, I think, and focus on, you know, your given that's to me what makes great salons. You know, that's what makes salons grow. As we mentioned, we worked for Peter Mark, who, you know, grew their business, you know, from one salon to, I'm not too sure how many they have now, 60, 70 salons, whatever it is. When I joined them, they would have had 30 at the time. And, you know, it's having that training for people to grow and to see that there's something out there for me moving on. And that, you know, you have their back. I think it's very important. And Richard talked about atmosphere, and it's one thing that I'm so proud of in our salons. And, you know, this year we've really seen it, our team coming in. And, you know, the atmosphere that was in them salons under major, major strain, major, you know, it wasn't difficult coming back after these lockdowns. And it won't be after this one either. But when people pull together, they can achieve amazing things. And that's what we've really seen this year.
And do you find, because, and it's just for other people out there, to learn, when you're working with family and you grow to like a team of 70, do you have definitive roles within the organization? Do you kind of go, well, like, your education, your finance, your recruitment, or do you bring it all in together?
Yeah, no, I think over the years, we've done a little bit more together. I think now over the latter years, and as we grow and mature and, you know, learn, I think we're finding that, you know, we all have, you know, what we're really good at, and we do specialize a little bit more in certain areas, although we do come together and go through all things together. But like, you know, Andrew would focus on, you know, the education side completely. She wouldn't really get too involved in what myself and Richard focus on, although, you know, I would, you know, we'd pull her in and out of, you know, what's happening. And, you know, we have to agree. We have to, you know, trust each other, but agree of where we're going as well.
Richard?
Yeah, well, it's like even before we came on today, Angie's setting up some education over the next couple of days. And, you know, we were all aware of what's going on, but she would ring us and say, is there anything that we feel, I feel, and Paul feels that we can, you know, get from this and what we want, you know? So even though she's on it, you know, and the same with the business, say myself and Paul look after a lot of the business side of it, but we very rarely do a major decision where all of us agreeing on it.
I think I just want to, it's probably because it's relevant now. That's just a book I'm reading at the moment. I spoke to you earlier about it, Richard, the learning code. And the fact that there's so much Zoom, like we're doing, we love Zoom now, we're all comfortable with it. But the one thing I got out of that, frightened me a little bit out of the book, is that the key to success is making the mistakes. So it's picking up the hair and blow drying it and getting it wrong 10 times to eventually get it right perfect. And with all this education now, you know what I mean? We're all watching. It's the physical act. And it's something that I'm going to talk to Alison about, that I feel a lot of our education might need the interaction on the other end of it. So, you know, might, in your case, it could be Angie doing a haircut, but there could be six students there with their mannequins on the other side. And then I was on a group chat earlier, it just happened to be watching, and one girl was talking about training her trainees while she's off. And one girl said, well, I was bringing them in. And somebody said, no, you can't do that. Stop doing that straight away. And the other person was doing it in a Zoom link, but she said we give them a project to do and then we come back to it. So I think it's just something that I think the industry itself we have to watch, is that the technology is brilliant, and I know you love it to bits, Paul. but nothing replaces the physical art of picking hair up in your hand.
It is something myself and Andrew were talking about earlier on, because one of the courses we're doing over the next couple of weeks is with Adam Reid, and he will do something, and Siobhan Jones is doing some colour. So they may not actually be able to apply colour and mix the colour they want to do that actual service or, you know, that model, but they'll at least have a head there with them to do some of the techniques. Yeah. Some people have chosen to just watch, but, you know, some people have chosen to participate. But it could be anybody. It could be a person or a model head, a training head they'll use. But I think you're right. It is very important that they're not just sitting there, because you can get a little bit, you know, complacent.
So. Yeah, I think your, you know, education all through the years, Greg, unless you're, you know, physically doing the act, watching isn't as beneficial as, you know, getting your hands in. And I think in our own training, we had great experience of being able to deal with clients, you know, real people, real heads, and that excels your career. I think Zoom is a great tool, it's an amazing tool, and we all have to learn how to adapt to this new world that we're in, and I think most people are doing that amazingly. But, you know, I think watching it is one thing. I think you do have to carry it out, and like, that's what we're doing. We'll be carrying it out on Dolly Heads, and as soon as we can get back into the salons, then we will, you know, bring that back into the salons. But it's, you know, constantly upskilling, education, and if you can't do it hands-on at this point in time, well then Zoom, Dolly Heads, whatever means you can, but you know, we still need to move forward, and this is the new way at the moment.
Yeah So leads me lovely into the next question. Because you, as I said in the beginning, Paul, you were a great mentor to me, yourself, Mark McCauley. Like, I don't think I'd have ever become the hairdresser I have become or did become without that early influence of yourself and Mark. And I suppose Peter, because Peter took me on at 21 years of age. But mentors are a big, you know what I mean, a big thing, you know, for everybody, I feel. I think we, whether it be from your parents, from early days. So what mentors have you had in your career, Paul, that you'd like to share, whether it be from the industry or outside of the industry?
Yeah, I mean, there's different types of mentors. There's, you know, your hair, like Sassoon would have been my sort of idol as, you know, mentor from a hairdressing point of view. I think when you come into the real world and start working in business, you come across different types of people, whether it be your manager. I had, as you mentioned, Peter MacDonald back in the early days, and then Liam Kennedy, who I know you have on your show shortly. I worked great with Liam over the years, learned a lot, and moved on. And then we met 365, Leslie Spears. I know Rich might talk about him. I had a great opportunity to spend time, myself and Angie, with Leslie for a couple of days. And Leslie teaches about life as well as business and how to really think differently, think outside the box. And I think that's really, really important, especially now. I was very lucky as well. Great man, Ivan Bischoff, through L'Oreal, we met, who steered us through a lot of times when we just needed, a shoulder to lead up, to lean on, and just someone to even talk to. Sometimes just listening. And some mentors are great at how they actually teach you, and it's just listening and just saying one or two things and helping you figure things out for yourself. That's actually a true mentor.
Yeah. Richard.
Yeah, like at an early stage, I was influenced by yourself, Craig, and Paul, and Mark McCauley. Mark McCauley for a different reason.
Still influences you, yeah.
Under the fear. But we had the opportunity, as I say, to go and meet people in 365 who are like-minded, and they weren't all hairdressers. Like Leslie Spears touched on hairdressing as a career, but as I say, it was about life, and I think that's what you need to remember. It's not about the people that are in your business that can be mentors to you. It can be people from other businesses. Like I have clients myself that run multinational companies as well. They inspire me. And then you have people like your family, your friends, and as you said earlier on, myself and Paul were talking, it is sometimes the person that can mentor you by not saying an awful lot. Sometimes nothing, it's just to be there to listen. And by you actually speaking to them, is yourself mentoring yourself, And like I'm fortunate, and we're having Paul and Angie, and then Wendy at home was in our career as well. It's great to kind of be able to come home and have that different aspect of it as well. So yeah, I think we're all surrounded by them. But as you say, sometimes we look for people that are up on pedestals, and sometimes they're the people that are sitting beside us that can mentor us just as good.
When is down tools time? Like, so when you come home, Paul, in the evening, and you and Angie have been working away, your four young boys, and Richard, when you, even though you and Wendy could still have work together, you're still in the same industry, you've two girls to come home to. When is that? It's very clear as no talk now, business. It's finished.
I've obviously, my daughter Alex now is working with us, and Sophie more on a part-time basis. But Alex, when she comes home, she's excited because she's doing her training as well at the moment. So she has her different, things, and we always try and have our dinner together, and it we do have that little discussion. But there is that time to say, right, guys, we need to have 10 minutes and, just kind of talk about ourselves and our day outside of work. You have to have those few minutes. But generally, just goes back to work again.
Paul?
Yeah, I mean, similar, I suppose. As you said, I've four younger boys, from teenagers down to, still in primary school. So it's quite mixed in our house what goes on. Very busy house. It's not that we don't have, we're very lucky, and I've always sort of said this, and I know, Greg, you feel the same, but it's what we do, it's who we are, hairdressing, So we don't particularly have downtime, with our career. I mean, we could be talking about it at 12 o'clock at night, in bed, something's going on or whatever, but not in a bad way. We've always done that. We worked together before we opened our business together, myself and Angie. So it's just part of who we are and what we do. My downtime sometimes to get away with it is to get out, go for a cycle, because there is time I need to get away. I need to clear my head, go for a run, whatever it may be. That's when I actually clear my head. And sometimes I do need to do that. It's not always, okay, for dinner, we're just going to not talk about work. We don't have them rules as such. What happens, happens, as Richard said. You might say, okay, we're not going to talk about it. And then later on, it just happens again. Because it's who we are. We're a family business. It's what we do. And we love it. So it's not a problem. It's not an issue. There are times we do need to clear our heads separately. Angie does her thing. But it's always, I find, something to do with, fitness, health, sport that actually clears your head.
Yeah.
Apart from alcohol, of course.
But then that leads perfectly into the next question, because I would look at you as a family, okay, and because I'm close to you over the years as well, is that you are probably the first people I really looked at in our industry that I would have looked and said, you know what, they get the work-life balance fairly right. You know what I mean? You made sure you had your good holidays, great memories with your family, you know what I mean? And you seem to get that balance right, you know what I mean? So there's no better two guys to ask this question that in the year that we had, 2020 and leading on to now, glass half full moments are the ones I hang on to and I try and find at least a couple every day. So is there any glass half full moments you'd look back on the last year and say, do you know what? If this hadn't happened, I would never have done that. I would have never known this. And that's a good glass half full moment. Richard, do you want to go first?
Yeah, I was thinking about this one a lot today. And, you know, what I found, and we touched on it earlier on when we were talking, Paul did there, about, you know, Wales had been closed down from March till the end of June that time. You know, obviously, it gave us a bit of time to spend with our family and that I really enjoyed it. And, you know, obviously exercise and so on and so forth. But in a business sense, when we came back, it was to see how people grew. Even though people, they were talked about it being a negative time, it wasn't. There was a lot of positivity when people came back to work. People who, they changed from those 3 months, you know, they stepped up. We came back into a busy time and they came straight back into it. And I thought that was fantastic. And again, then 2 months later, we closed again. And again, these people stepped up to the mark. And it was in all aspects, from the trainees to the front of the house, to the stylists, you know, the younger stylists and the more senior stylists. You know, they were all fantastic. And I think that was a positive that I got out of it. You know, half glass, half full. I don't know which way you would think that, but there was a negative of being closed. But the positive and see how people work together coming back was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. The coming back was like unbelievable, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was fantastic.
In my whole life of work, and I never experienced that togetherness and the empathy from the client. You know what I mean? The guests of the salon, how well respected we were and wanted, you know? Yeah, yeah. We often doubt that at times. So, Paul, what do you feel? Have your class?
Yeah, you touched on it there, Greg, how the public took us, you know? I mean, I remember certainly in the first lockdown, you know, it was all talk about hairdressing. I mean, they were, you know, firing at the HSA, HSE, you know, in meetings on TV, they were asking about when the hairdressers opening back up, we want the hairdressers back, you know? So that solidarity from the public out there was amazing. And as Richard said, you know, our team's coming back and all through the industry, you know, I'm so proud of our industry, how we've actually come through this. You know, what I've learned is how strong we are, you know, together as a family, as a business, and as a team, and what we've built, and our team around us, how resilient they have been through this. They've come back once, they've come back twice, they're going to do it a third time. And, you know, we're on, you know, onto some of our team, and they're so looking forward to getting back. You know, it's funny you ask that half full, half empty glass or half full glass. I'm a bit of, you know, we're a bit yin and yang, you know. Angie and Richard and myself, I'm sort of a little bit of the pessimist sometimes, the devil's advocate. I can see, which sometimes can be harmful, but sometimes it's no harm as well, to see what can go wrong, what is going wrong. Because if you don't know what can and what isn't going to go wrong, you can't maybe fix it either, you know. So, and then Angie's very positive, and so is Richard. So that's why, you know, we work very well together as a team. I think I do sometimes look at, you know, the negatives going on, and I have Richard and Angie to pick me up on the positives. But we always come out on that side. So the glass half full for us was just amazing how our teams pulled together and how resilient they were. And we're very positive about the future in our business and our teams.
Great answer. That leads lovely into my final question. And that's, what would you like the future, if you had a crystal ball, of the next 12 months, 16 months, maybe we'll extend it out to 16 because we could be closed a bit longer.
Yeah.
But what would you like to see happen, you know what I mean, in the future of your business? Who wants to go first?
Well, I think at the moment on news today, we're getting dates and, you know, another date. And I think the first and foremost thing is stability for our business and our team, you know, and we can't really give that stability until we get a date to go back, you know. And I think that's what everybody wants. They want to know, when am I going back? They're excited to go back. We're very much in contact with them at the moment and today as well. You know, people text me, can't wait to see how he's getting on, you know. They want to get back. And then once we get back then and get our momentum going, we need to see, well, we need to know where that business kind of stability is going to be with clients. Like, we're all going to be busy when we go back, and then it's when it dips. Mm-hmm. And then when's the next? So we have to get that stability and try and understand it. And I think the only way you can understand it is by sharing information, like meeting people like yourself, Craig, and obviously working with companies like L'Oreal and, you know, Alpha Parf and all them. Well, is they have information that we can share. And I think that's what we need to get stability and an understanding going forward. But we have to look after ourselves first and foremost, our team, and get our clients back in, look after them, and then get them back and get that momentum going.
And let's not forget, we actually have an official apprenticeship out there at the moment,
which
Alex is one of the studying at the moment, which is fantastic.
Yeah, it's very positive.
That's a positive there to look forward to. Let's hope that grows and goes from strength to strength. So, Paul, yourself.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the stability, as Richard said, I mean, if, as I say, you know, me looking at the pessimistic side as regards to when we get back, how will we get back, what's the client's, you know, visit going to be? Is it going to be every 6 weeks, or are they going to stretch it out to 10 weeks? So there's a lot that have gone on. There's a lot of worries in our business about people maybe doing box dye colors at home or having their hair done at home. When will they come back into the salons? We all know we're going to be busy when we open for the first 3 or 4 weeks, as is before, but how busy will we be and for how long? So that is the challenge that faces us. But, you know, from the positive side, you know, we've seen how the public have responded to us. And I think the next 12 to 18 months will be very challenging for businesses, in all businesses, not just ourselves. But, you know, from what we've learned and what we've been able to do and the time that we've had closed, and to be able to rethink our business and look at things that we wouldn't have had time to do. Sometimes even if you're not behind the chair all the time, you don't look at your business and magnify into it. We're able to do that now. So we feel, you know, we're very positive about the future, about growing Zeba, growing the company, and training. We have a huge training program in place for our teams. And we think, you know, 12 to 24 months will see us grow even further.
Will it be a fifth?
And a sixth.
What's lockdown.
Not fifth. Oh, Jesus, no.
So
listen, guys, that's it. That's fantastic. It's been great. I really enjoyed it because I knew what was coming. Is there an inspiration to the industry in the way you conduct yourselves throughout the years, in the way you look after your team? And I think the key secret is a lot of those people that joined you 28 years ago are still with you today. And I think that says a lot for your business. You know, if you have a quick goodbye you want to say to the fellow Salon Soul brothers and sisters out there, I'll let you both take the stage.
Yeah, well, listen, Greg, thanks very much for inviting us on. It's always a pleasure having a chat. We were out on the beach the other day, only walking around, and it was fun. And this was really good. And listen, best wishes to everybody in the industry over the next few weeks.
Well, yeah, Greg, this is great what you're doing for people to share stories. And if we can all share our stories, sometimes in our industry, we don't do that enough. And I found through this, I'm talking to a lot of other hairdressers, and I'd like to shout out to them all. I think it's all sharing a little bit of, you know, motivation for each other, I think is what we need. And that's what the future holds. Best of luck, guys.
I think the whole aim is to keep the industry alive. And we don't want to see anybody's door closed. We want to see all the doors open, because there's enough business out there for us all. You know what I mean? We really want, and keeping it within the confines of safety and security for the people that work within the industry. And that can only happen by salons like yourself keeping the doors open. So, Salon Soul brothers and sisters, until we meet again on another evening, it's goodbye for me and the Zeba brother.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to our 7 out of 7 Hump of the Week archive interview with Paul and Richard Drumgoole of Zeba Hairdressing. If you're enjoying our interviews, don't keep it to yourself. Please subscribe to our channel and share with our fellow Salon Soul brothers and sisters around the globe. Thank you so much for your time.